Welcome to the Speed Trap Podcast. I'm Betsy.
And I'm Sophie. Join us weekly to stay updated on the latest racing news.
And to hear our thoughts and opinions on each topic.
And this episode is a box office on Mostly It's Complicated 2020.
It is complicated. Boom. No, this was a really interesting documentary, I think, because I, for one, was not super familiar with who Max Mosley was, which I know compared to you is different because you said to me before we started recording that in the UK, Max Mosley is definitely more of like a larger figure just within the world, especially his father, right?
Well, I mean, which to us, that's where it's from in the UK for sure. His father is very notoriously infamous in British politics. So, unfortunately, which was covered in this documentary, Max can't really escape his father's shadow in some ways. So that's sort of where I knew him from. And, you know, out of my own curiosity, once when I like first started becoming interested in Formula One and looking into it and seeing Max Mosley and then making that connection, then I got really interested in like, how has this guy's son become to be in charge of such an industrious business like Formula One? It's such a global thing. And then nobody has anything to say about the fact that he was Oswald Mosley's son. And I was like, what is this? So I'm glad we watched this documentary because it clears up a lot of the origins of things like that.
Right. Right. I mean, I think too, like, I mean, A, like how difficult it would be to escape any sort of tie to that. I mean, but I think the other thing that was really nice and interesting to me was that he was very straightforward about it. Like, he was not, he wasn't like, oh yeah, sorry, like nothing happened. I mean, no, he was like, yeah, like Hitler was at my parents' wedding, like,
they got married in Goebbels' living room.
It's like, okay.
It's wild. Like, he's like, yeah, my mom met Hitler through her sister, and then they became friends. I was like, wow. I knew they would probably cover that aspect, especially since this is supposed to be some sort of, like, almost like a biopic in nature. Of course, it's a documentary about him, so. And he definitely wrote about this stuff in his book and things like that, so he's never really hid it, and you can't really hide it. Especially with it being such public information. I mean, the royal family can't even hide that, you know, the Queen's uncle was an associate of Hitler's as well. So, like, I don't think the Mosley family will be able to hide that. Especially considering his father founded the British Union of Fascists. So, so I appreciated that too, that it was very like, well, this is my family history. But I think it's the way they did it too was very good for setting up the whole path this documentary was going to take us on.
Well, they also made him in a very weird way, dare I say, relatable. I don't know.
No, I get what you mean.
We felt like some sympathy towards him because
for sure
he was really wanting to step outside of that bubble that his family had created for him, like that shadow that like was really difficult to get away with no matter where he went.
Right.
And then he'd stumbled upon racing and Silverstone. And like, that was very life changing for him to have a space where like it didn't matter. And the only Mosley that people associated the name Mosley to was,
a coach builder, I believe. Yeah.
What was his name? Artie?
Something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, the only association the last name Mosley had in the racing world was with that guy. And he was like, he was very respected. I found my world, you know, where I can be my own person. Which I think, the way they set that up is very relatable for sure. I mean, like, they did go through his history before that. I thought it was funny the way he talked about, and I went to Oxford and I got a degree, but it wasn't a good degree. He literally has a law degree from Oxford. It's like, what are you on about? And I think the way his life has been both horribly disturbing in ways, but also very serendipitous, because the way he meets Robin Hood at Oxford and then partners with Robin Hood to start March Engineering, that really lucked out that it went from law to defending motorsport as like a safe haven to have somebody like Robin Hood as an acquaintance or a friend.
Yeah.
To be able to pursue that. And also serendipitous in the fact that he was born into wealth. So, or relative wealth, right? His mum was from a wealthy family, a socialite family. She was one of the famous Mitford sisters, which I guess they're like the Upper East Siders of their day in London, if you want to create a comparison. They were the It Girls. So he had that going for him, apart from the fact that they were interned for the first few years of his life.
So
he did have a lot of luck in that aspect, but also the association with his parents was also, it was a very paradoxical relation, I think, that he feels with them, because he does talk about how much his parents influenced him, especially his father, even though he recognizes that his father was a controversial, mostly negative figure in the world.
Mostly terrible.
He did say, like, everything he did in his life, he did for the benefit of other people, or he thought he was doing for the benefit of other people. And that's something I took inspiration from my father. So it's less so his social leanings and more so his character that he recognizes. So I thought that was very interesting as well.
I thought it was good to not see him lean away from the stuff that was really ugly.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and the way they covered the whole incident where his father was attacked by a crowd and he was there and punched somebody, and he was like, well, of course I would defend my elderly father. Like, what do you want me to do? Just stand around and watch him get beat? So, but later in the documentary, when they get into his later career after Motorsport, when that gets brought back up, it's like the way that they foreshadow so much in this documentary for aspects of his later life, I think is done very well. So I appreciated the structure of this documentary a lot. And I think it was one of the better, documentaries that focuses on a singular person's story that I've seen in a while, especially if we're going to compare it to the likes of, you know, like the Schumacher documentary or the Senna or the Williams documentary that we watched for Box Office. But I will say with this is that I do take this documentary with, you know, a grain of salt, because it definitely comes across as a puff piece for Max Mosley. In a way, do you know what I mean?
Needs it a little bit.
He needs reassuring.
I mean, he did not come from a place of Max Mosley is awesome and cool and great. Yeah. Like, people were like, wow, your dad is a horrible human being. So, like, that shadows him. So at first he's like, can't get away from it. And then throughout his career, he became super controversial.
Mm-hmm.
With him, and especially with Bernie Ecclestone.
Besties.
Just a really toxic relationship. Very odd. That's the true it's complicated part of this whole documentary. That was like, what the heck is happening with these two?
They built their initial relation as this, like, oh my God, I can't believe we found each other. We're the perfect partners to rule this section of motorsport, to rule Formula One. We work so well together. And they have all these talking heads of people within the sport that discuss how, from their perspective, it was like they revolutionized the sport. They made it what it was today. Without them, like, it would be a different world. They like work so harmoniously. But then you find out later that there's like a lot of turbulence there, really.
Very much so. Very much so.
Yeah.
Oh, the other thing that they introduced really early on was Max Mosley's commitment and concern for safety.
Yes.
Throughout the sport. And I was like,
yes.
Yeah. I respect that.
I imagine he would be an advocate for the halo. He probably was. I was going to say.
Not dead right now.
No. I was just, because he was out of motorsport by the time that happened in Formula One, so I don't know if he had any sort of voice about it, but I'm sure he definitely did. I just haven't read that myself. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, they introduced that when they talked about when he began his short-lived racing career, right? Like, the very first race he competed in was the race that Jim Clark was killed in, which, that's a crazy story in itself. That, like I said, everything in his life seems so serendipitous, right? And this documentary paints it in a way that all these things happen for a reason in his life. And you really believe that based on the outcome of the circumstances. And I say serendipitous, I don't necessarily mean in a positive way, because this definitely, it was positive for his outlook on his career, but negative in the fact that, you know, Jim Clark died. So,
right.
But the point of that was, like, Jim Clark wasn't wearing seatbelts in that race, and right. Max Mosley was. And they talked about how Max was always interested in, like, the science and fundamentals of safety, which I think is, it really has played a role throughout his entire career, especially later in his Formula One career when he was FIA president. Like, it's very interesting how much that has played a role in the shaping of how he ruled the sport and things like that.
Right.
So, yeah, very interesting.
I mean, I think for one thing, it's like, I didn't just feel like he wanted to solely just be in power to be in power, which sometimes that's a vibe I got from Bernie.
Bernie's definitely like that, for sure.
I was trying to be a little more polite about it.
No, he's not a great person, so we don't have to be.
But I feel like with, I almost keep calling him Ted.
God, Mosley. Ted Mosley. Ted Mosley's a person, though, right?
Yeah, he's the How I Met Your
Mother. Oh, How I Met Your Mother. That's guy. Right. How I Met Your Mother. Bernie Eccleston.
How I Met Bernie Eccleston.
That's kind of what this documentary was, in a way. Max Mosley.
Max Mosley. I completely lost my train of thought, but I think I was saying something along the lines
he wasn't in power just for the sake of power. That's what you were
right,
saying.
Right, yeah. It seemed like he actually had goals that he wanted to accomplish and right. things that he cared about. And
right.
not that everybody loved that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, there were definitely some times where he clashed heads with people, but he also just didn't really care about what other people thought about it.
Yeah, I think that was a true point they were trying to make throughout this documentary, because multiple times it was brought up, like, you can try and push Max Mosley out of this, but he doesn't respond to that. He will just continue to exist in his own way in the world that he wants to exist. So, which played true for a lot of his life, I think. And I think a lot of that probably stems from his father. His father was a very strong-headed, strong-willed person who, despite his, you know, unpopular, controversial ideas, continued to push them in the public eye and not care about what people thought. I mean, especially if you're getting, although they did say he got married in Germany because there was a fear of violence, but I bet if there was no fear of violence, he probably would have had such a public wedding to be like, screw you, British public,
yeah,
I have a life.
But, yeah.
I
mean, I think that also probably just comes from knowing what his reputation is as the son of the father of the British fascists, right?
Yes.
Your reputation is that you have to kind of
resist.
You have to be able to have, like, a thick skin for that and not
totally
really care what people think of you in general, because you're just never going to, like, fully escape that.
And he does, as far as I'm concerned, have a thick skin.
No, he does, but, like, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Which definitely. I think is part of it, is he's, like, head down, I just want to do what I want to do, and, like, that's it.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think that head down, I'm going to do what I want to do, again, was very serendipitous for the beginnings of his Formula One career as a constructor as well, right? I mean, we get the story of March Grand Prix Engineering in this documentary, which he founded with Robin Hurd, the man he met at Oxford, who went to study engineering.
Right.
And they had, like, 10% of the money they would actually have needed to really have a functioning Formula One team constructor, and, you know, like, almost wipe the field immediately. So whether that's in, like, their intellect really playing into it well and just having a meeting of minds that came out on top, or it plays into a serendipity of, you know, I keep saying that word. I feel like that's word of the episode, serendipity. But, you know, of the other Formula One teams that you're maybe not recognizing that they might have a new challenger or might have had to step up from what they're used to, and them coming in and blowing the field away. Because, again, that sort of they talked about how that revolutionized motor racing and how Formula One wasn't very happy about it as an organization. They were like, this is almost disrespectful that they've managed to do this to us.
Yeah. No, I mean, for sure. They were two, both Bernie and him,
mm-hmm.
really did change the course of Formula One, and can argue if it's good or bad. I don't know.
I think throughout his entire life, he's always been able to step into an environment that he's new to and be able to completely flip it on its head. He's along with Bernie this time, but like,
yeah,
he has this just ability to step into somewhere and immediately understand it completely and be able to manipulate it to his own will and come out on top of everybody, which I think is kind of incredible to witness,
yeah,
in a person, because it's not often that you see that, and like, especially in something like Formula One, which is so political that you can see so many people just getting pushed out all the time, like, because of small things that they've said.
Right, exactly.
Although I suppose now it's almost more political because of Max and Bernie.
Yeah.
In a way.
I mean, I think the thing, though, that's interesting is watching this right now,
mm-hmm.
right, as we watch.
In the historical context of the present day, yeah.
Exactly.
For sure.
When we watch Michael Massey get fired, or whatever you want to call it, fired, loaned out, pushed upwards, you know.
Moved parallel. Yeah.
Whatever.
A lateral move.
Exactly. So I think just seeing this now is like a very historically interesting context for it as well.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. But it's also like they're so old school, if that makes sense. Like, he still has that era just as a person, and like how the decisions that he makes, it's like, and how he wanted things to go is like still very much like he was a racer, mm-hmm. with like Jim Clark. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It still seems like he's very much in that era where, right. like, it's hard to even like compare him to somebody like Michael Massey because they're just totally different generations.
Totally.
I mean, yeah, like, obviously, like, age wise, yes, but I just mean like,
no.
motorsport, like,
right.
evolution wise, like, it's just.
I mean, yeah. Mosley was at the grassroots level before he was ever at the top, so it was definitely a natural progression rather than, you know, here's a favor for you to get this position type of thing. Although that did kind of happen later with him becoming FIA president, where Bernie was like, here's a shoo-in, boy, we can work together. But initially, right, where they started FOCA, the Formula One Constructors Association, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were up against Jean-Marie Balest of FISA, which is essentially the FIA now, kind of. They were like mortal enemies. And really, what you're saying too about how he just has this like aura about him of old school, that's really what got Enzo Ferrari to switch sides in that whole battle, right? Was that Enzo really liked Bernie as a person, and
yeah.
he understood that Max was a racer at heart, and so was Enzo. And so that really triggered the whole, the FIA is the rules and FOCA is the money, like that
right.
whole situation that created what is the Concorde Agreement. So it's very interesting. He's at the root of so much of why the sport is the way it is today.
Right.
And I mean, he was with figureheads like Frank Williams and Colin Chapman and, you know, the likes of them back in the day figuring out all this stuff. And I think it's so funny that they were able to do it just based on, you know, sheer belief in themselves that they were going to be able to bluff their way into flipping the table into their hands. Which really they did, because the money is what controls the sport, really.
It is.
So, and they say that, which is really what they wanted after all. After
yeah.
all, anyway. So they were like, gotcha, Jean-Marie. Bye. Like, really. And then he came for his job a few years later. So it's crazy.
I guess, what do you think as far as like the end of his career, and like how do you feel about that? Like, is the way the, that it
like the news of the world stuff?
Like, yeah, just in general, like how did it affect you? I guess I'm curious how you felt about it.
Like at the time or now?
Rewatching it. What you're thinking now.
Well, I think, you know, at the time when it all happened, I was still very young, but like the News of the World scandal was a pretty big story in the UK, obviously, for many reasons. The phone hacking, the car tracking, you know, all of that. I mean, I wasn't expecting to see Hugh Grant in this documentary.
Right?
That was kind of mind-blowing, but I know that he was, I remember him being quite a very prevalent figure in this movement to regulate the media's ability to spy on people, essentially. I remember him being a very strong face for it. So when I thought about it, I was like, oh, that makes sense. I was like, why is Hugh Grant? And then I saw it was like board member of Hacktoff. And then I was like, oh, Hacktoff, hacking, got it. That's why he's here. But like looking back at it now, I think, you know, Max Mosley's right. I mean, I don't think that should have affected his job outcome, but I feel like the world we live in is very much based on personal action now rather than capability to do a job. And so unfortunately that is the way it worked for him. But the way that Bernie handled it, I thought was very interesting to hear them talk about in retrospect, how much he said, like, of everything I've done in my life, that's the one thing I regret doing is not having the back of Max, because he's my friend and I'm ashamed that I was kind of spineless in that situation, which
he was very,
I think it's rare to hear Bernie say something like that so publicly. So I thought that was quite a powerful moment in the documentary.
Like, I thought so too.
Having seen this with having had no knowledge of that whole scandal before, like, what were you thinking of this?
Well, I had some knowledge of that scandal before.
Okay.
Because I had watched, I don't know who posted it, but it was like one of those like YouTube like short little documentaries about like the whole scandal. So like I knew that because we had originally talked about it long while back, because I was like, wait, what the heck are they talking about? So then I did some research. You sent me some videos too.
And I mean, I think I remember talking to you about Oswald Mosley before as well.
You might have.
I did briefly. Yeah. But anyway, continue. Sorry.
No, but anyways, I agree. Like, I think, I don't know. Like, it was like such a mess.
Yes.
That I was just like, I don't even know what is happening anymore. And like, still even now, I'm like so confused about like how it all happened and like went together. It was just like a disaster. It was like a dumpster fire.
I think it's exemplary of how Formula One kind of operates though, right?
I think that's true.
Everyone's grabbing for all the power. And if there's an opportunity to oust somebody in a very public way in order to bring favor to your own stance, then they'll do it. Like Flavio Briatore, infamously, in this documentary, I thought it was great that they managed to interview people like him as an opposition voice, as well as some other people like Patrick Dufler. I think it was great that they got him, the Marlboro man. That was great too. The way that they were sort of like still spoke about each other like they were old friends though, which I was like, that's kind of sweet that they respect each other. But Flavio was known to hate Bernie and Max as a Formula One team principal. I mean, ex-Benetton Renault team principal, if some of you don't know. He was actually in Saudi Arabia last week on the grid, funnily enough, and he looks exactly the same. He hasn't aged a day.
No, it's not changed.
But he was a very outspoken opponent of them, and it was sort of seen as like this News of the World scandal was potentially a plant for someone like him to, ascend to power, even though he was asked, did you ever want to run F1? And he was like, no, of course not. It was like, because other people in the documentary were like, you know, Flavio really was going for their throats. So,
yeah.
And the whole Indianapolis 2005, they talked about, that was a huge thing for Flavio, right? Where Mosley was like, that was probably the most difficult scandal of my career, with the Bridgestone v Michelin and they're refusing to change the circuit out, layout, and then Flavio very publicly being like, this is ridiculous, and blah blah blah, and then
You know, I want to hear about that, which I know is sort of an isolated incident outside of like just Max Mosley in general.
Yeah,
but when that whole thing was happening, I was like, that's not his fault that your tires are bad. Like,
right.
Don't be whiny. Like, I mean, just suck it up.
And again, like, it roots in his safety goals, right? Is that you can't have tires exploding and potential fatal incidents, especially at Indianapolis, right? A very fast circuit. So, and you know what I think was also very nice is that they had Charlie Whiting. And I was very shocked that he was in this because I was like, oh my God. I didn't realize that they had managed to interview him before he had passed away.
Well, I think that this sort of showed that, like, a lot of people felt very, like, I don't know what the word is, but they definitely felt something that they would want to be part of this documentary.
Yes.
Which I feel like, and it's not just like, oh, like, really good people, like, really cool people. Mm-hmm. Like, it was, like, a little bit of, like, everyone. Like, you get Hugh Grant, it's like, okay.
He even said, I'm glad I can call Max Mosley a friend because I would not want to call him an enemy. Like, you know, saying stuff like that. It's like very interesting.
Right. But then you have Charlie Whiting, who like did not have to be there at all.
No.
But he's like a little like, everyone loves Charlie. So
everyone
like,
loves Charlie.
Yeah.
Miss Charlie.
But then you have Bernie, and Bernie, you're like,
Bernie will be in anything. He loves having his face in everything.
His hair.
His mop of a haircut. Legendary haircut. No, but I agree. It speaks to Max's character probably that people were, despite holding opposition to him in the past, willing to speak about him and his character as a sportsman, a businessman, a person, and not hold a grudge over him in any way. So,
right.
I agree. Right. I think it speaks to his character totally that people were so willing to participate. But going back to, like, the structure, I think it was very...
Yeah.
Like, you were talking about how Indianapolis was, like, a very interesting point to talk about. I think they very much cherry-picked the best moments for storytelling that would foreshadow a lot of his later life from his Formula One career. Like, the way they talked about the death of Roger Williamson, who was the first driver that was killed in... one of their cars, one of the March Grand Prix engineering cars, and how he was stood next to Roger Williamson's father and had to look him in the eye and explain that he probably was dead, and how that made him reevaluate his path in life and if he wanted to continue in motorsport. And then it continued on to, you know, like the infamously horrible San Marino Grand Prix of 1994, where we lost Roland Ratzenberger and Ayrton Senna, and Rubens Barrichello was terribly injured. And then the week after Monaco, we had Carl Wendlinger also terribly injured, and that was like a huge watershed moment for him and also for Formula One and safety, and and how it led to him creating Euro NCAP, because he asked Sid Watkins, former FIA doctor, who great person, everyone loves him too, he's like the Charlie Whiting of the medical world in Formula One.
Yes.
And how it led to him creating Euro NCAP to promote road safety, because he thought that the government would be investigating how to make roads safer, and then they could use that research to make Formula One safer. But he found out they weren't, and so he took on this burden of not only helping motorsport but helping regular people on the roads. And then that sort of became like a mission for him in his life. And you know, all these moments definitely foreshadow everything, like how San Marino influenced, you know, him to the present day at the time of filming, trying to bring India its first five-star road car, and then Roger Williamson's death, almost sort of foreshadowing a parallel in his own life when they discussed his son's suicide and how he had to then become that father that faced the death of his son.
Right.
And he worries that something he did might have tipped the scale on his mental health because of the News of the World scandal. Like, there's so many good setups that, like, you're not thinking about when you're watching it, but then you get to those moments later and you're like, oh.
Right.
And you think about what. It's great.
And somehow they were also able to, like, sort of like what you're saying, but, like, they had, like, a lot of different, like, little storylines kind of, like, that were all very interconnected, but also kind of had separate lives of their own.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was just so well done, because I have not seen that from any of the other four documentaries we've watched.
Three.
From the other three documentaries we've watched, I haven't seen that. So I thought that this did really well. And I thought it was, I mean, I know that he's still, like, a racer, quote unquote, but he's more than, I would say he's more like FA director, that side of the sport, than the racer side of the sport. So it was fun to see a documentary on somebody on that side of it, and especially one that I wasn't hugely familiar with.
I mean, he really, like, was almost like the heart and soul of where the maybe not the heart and soul, maybe more like the brain of the sport. I don't know if I would say heart and soul, because it was definitely, he's such a business-minded person, and we saw multiple times throughout this documentary people talking about how intelligent he was. He's just so capable of doing whatever he wanted to because he had the intelligence to do it. And
and I mean, I don't think he really
read people.
No, for sure. He was very, he was not like a super emotional guy, really.
Right.
Like, he was very, like, matter of fact.
Right.
But there were spots where, like, you could see his emotion, which was, like, nice. And something that kind of spoke to me was very early on in the beginning when, I think it was Jim Clark's crash, right? And the car went up in flames and stuff, and it was awful, awful. And he was rewatching the footage, and then he was, like, saying afterwards, he was like, I can't believe that, like, only, I can't remember who it was, and I feel bad that I can't remember who it was, but that one driver got up out of his car to try to pull him out of the crash, and he was like, I can't believe no one else did that, and they all just drove past. And I was like, same. Me too. Because, like, I always remember that moment when Ayrton Senna did that. He pulled over to go check on another driver that was upside down. And I just think that's, like, a nice little, like, moment of humanity. I think that's cool.
I think that's why he was such a capable figure of running a sport like that, is that he was able to separate the spectacle of it to the humanity of it. And he would talk about how, even with road cars, he was talking about how, you know, it doesn't matter how somebody dies, whether it's, you know, in a road car incident, or it's a murder, or it's whatever it is, the people that get left behind are always affected by it. And it's rarely thought about like that in something like motorsport, because it's such a spectacle, you know, and it was almost common back then to experience loss of that scale. So he really, even though despite his somewhat cold exterior as a businessman, had a level of humanity in him that I think pertained to him having the ability to run this sport so well. And to be the FIA president, to have a mind like his, I think really played into their favor, for sure.
I think so too. I think I'm just happy though that it, like, because I feel like even though the documentary wrapped it up pretty nicely, like, I feel like people could have walked away from it being like, wow, Max Mosley is terrible, he sucks, you know what I mean? But I'm kind of glad to see that that wasn't necessarily like the general consensus from a lot of the his colleagues and people like that, you know.
Yeah,
because they did show up in the doc, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely spoke about multiple times he made many enemies in his career. It's hard not to in a sport like this, or in an industry like this. And he was a controversial figure, and he wasn't always well liked. But like we were saying, like you were saying, it seems that the people that he worked closest with respected him so highly that it almost plays into him in reality being a good person, and maybe just perhaps a sort of maybe selfish businessman. I mean, you have to be selfish in business, and maybe that's why it creates the enemies that he did. Or, you know, I'm sure money always makes things complicated, right? It's complicated, the name of the documentary.
It is complicated.
And I think the fact that they even called it It's Complicated speaks to wanting to portray the nuances of his life, right? Like, he was never made out to be, like, the bad guy in this documentary. It definitely felt one-sided in that aspect, and I would like to see, I don't know, maybe Flavio will make a documentary one day, but I don't know. But I would, like, how we talked about the Senna documentary, how it felt like, sure, Prost is going to make one. I was going to say that how the Senna documentary felt like an homage in a way to this, like, almost like saint of a person. Like, this was maybe not on that level, but it had a similar aspects of he's a great guy on the inside, like, that's all you need to look for, rather than don't look at maybe, like, some cruel decisions he's made in business, you know?
Right.
Which I think was maybe the goal of this documentary anyway, was to look inside the person behind the name and the job. And I think it achieved its goal in a way, if we want to take everything they say, you know, at face value.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. I think it was...
I enjoyed it a lot, too.
I think it was a good... I never felt bored watching it.
I neither. I would rank it up higher.
Yeah. Maybe not the best documentary in the world, but I think...
No, but higher.
It served its purpose. It served its purpose. It kept you focused, which a lot of documentaries can drag. And also, I appreciated the length of it. I think an hour and a half was probably a perfect length. I think they spent the perfect amount of time covering each incident. They didn't go too in-depth to the point that it was hard to understand things.
No.
But they weren't
They wrapped everything up, like, nicely.
But it wasn't so surface level that it was sort of like, I need to know more of what happened there, you know? Yeah. So I think it was a very good pace. It was a very good structure. The content made a lot of sense, playing into how they were trying to tell his story. And overall, you come out with a sympathy for this man, which I think was their goal in the end of the day.
I mean, I think that I do, but I also came from such a blank slate of me not really having any sort of feelings on him before.
Yeah.
But I know that for you, it's going to be much more layered.
Right. I will say, though, like, I feel like similar to you. I definitely come out with this sympathy for him from having such a strange childhood, disturbing childhood, to making a name for himself. So I have a huge respect for how he overcame all of that, for sure. And I totally respect what he did for data privacy rights as well. I think that was cool.
Car safety
as well. Like, he has done stuff, and I think that was what troubled him the most, was like, throughout you could hear him talking about how he felt like his father had achieved everything in his life by the time he was 30, and so the rest of his life was wasted, and he never wanted to waste any of his life, but he wanted to achieve as much as his father had achieved, in a way. And not in the same path, but he did talk about how he, like, regretted not pursuing politics to an extent, and he felt like that was because of his father, which I think is fair to say that that probably would have affected his chances.
Yeah, that I would not have.
Yeah, so I think, and Bernie even said that, he's like, I think the one thing he never committed to in his life enough was politics.
Politics.
Yeah. So, I mean, I totally respect this man, and you can tell that he's, like, shaped through his family and how it has affected his path in life, for sure. And he's just a very interesting character, and I think no, this documentary can't. Made sense to make about him. Because sometimes I'm like, why would you make a documentary about this person? Like, just because they were cool? Like, are they that interesting, you know?
He's interesting.
But he's interesting. And
no, but you also just can't make this stuff up about, like, exactly. how he ended up in this sport. Like, how he exactly. felt. Like, I was yeah. like, what the heck? Am I watching the right thing? Like,
yeah. I mean, it's lightning in a bottle for a documentarian to get a story like this and to be yeah. able to tell it so well. So,
yeah.
But yeah.
It was good. And I thought it was really, I don't know. I just think overall, I just felt like I liked him at the end.
Right.
Like, which... I didn't. I thought, like, even though his childhood, like, was terrible for him and, like, mm-hmm. the way that he spoke about it was, like, he was very okay with how it all was. It was nice.
Yeah, it's like he had come to terms with his yeah, life.
Wasn't,
yeah.
like, holding all this stuff, like, close to the belt and, like, all this trauma that, like, I don't want to tell you. Like, I mean, which is fine. Like, you don't tell your yeah. trauma. But, like, I thought it was nice that they didn't, like, pick away at things that he wasn't able to articulate, I guess. Yeah,
I remember at one point the interviewer asked him, did your parents ever tell you that they loved you? And he, like, took a second to think about his answer, because I think he genuinely had to think about it, to be honest. And then he said, I think my mother did, because she doted on us quite a lot. But he couldn't, like, give a confirmation, you know, as well. And I think that also says a lot.
Very, very absent parents yeah. in that way.
Yes.
Like, he said, reasons. Like, yeah, like, he said that early on. He was like, I just kind of figured as a kid that, like, everyone's parents were locked up.
Yeah. Wild, right?
Whoa.
And he is, you know, I think he came out better for it. You know, I mean,
and I liked what he said too about, like, being born into, like, money.
Mm-hmm.
As he said, if you're, like, fortunate to be born into money, like, the best you can do with it is, like, actually make something out of it. And I was like, yeah. I like that philosophy.
And the way he talked about nice. The news of the world and the data privacy, and he was like, I'm doing this so that people without money can also protect their name from slander and libel
yeah.
as well. And I was like, well, see, that seems like the heart of who he is that he just wants what he has been able to do to be an opportunity for other people in a way.
I agree.
Which is so interesting in a sport like Formula One that's just, which is seen as so elitist and classist and
right?
for the rich and, you know, very and very niche to the point where, like, people won't watch it just because they think it's for snobs or whatever, you know what I mean? So it's very interesting to see an almost wholesome figure like Max, even working with Bernie Ecclestone, who's perhaps the opposite of that. He is definitely money-oriented guy. And that's maybe where, you know, they played into each other's hands. You know, like, they were like oil and water, but to a point where they managed to figure out how to mix together, you know?
Yeah.
Sort of foils for each other. And I think that's maybe where they work so well. If that makes sense.
I think it does.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I liked it. I felt good about it.
Yeah. But yeah, just to end though, he did pass away last yeah. year, just to make note of that, because this documentary came out right before he died.
2020.
Yeah. The year before. So it was very timely as well that it did come out then. And I think it was nice that it was made before he died. I wonder if that was the exodus of it, is that he had received this diagnosis of cancer and was like, I need to document my life. But in a way, I felt like it had been probably not, though, because they managed to interview, like, Charlie Whiting, who had passed away 2019, and so they must have been making this documentary for years at this, so
yeah,
timely indeed. But
takes time to do those things.
Yeah. And so at the time of his death, it was put down to cancer as his cause of death, which made sense and it was expected. And Bernie Ecclestone actually was the person to confirm it to the media that he had passed. But then actually very recently, like last week, it came out in an inquest that they had done into his death that he had actually committed suicide with a gunshot wound to the head, and it was
because he had cancer,
and he wanted to die on his own terms. Which,
yeah, he didn't want to struggle.
Yeah, so, sort of, you know, he euthanized himself in a very violent manner, essentially.
Yeah.
Which, learning that after watching this documentary, what goes through your head?
I don't know. It doesn't really surprise me. Like, it's sad. Like, it's like, I don't think about that, but like, it doesn't surprise me in the way. It's sort of how he, like,
he wanted everything on his own terms, right?
Yeah, and he was like, I'm not gonna stick around and suffer. Like, yeah, I'm a peace out now. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of his vibe. It's like,
I don't
need to stick around and slowly die for the next month. I'm going to be done now.
Yeah. I think I said to you before we started recording, like, one of the very opening quotes of this documentary was him saying, I only choose the battles I can win. Mm-hmm. And that feels very much so what was his thought process towards the end. And, you know, you're right. It seems almost like it was not meant to be, because that was awful, but like, he did everything on his own terms, and even death.
I think
so.
That just kind of brings it full circle, right? Like,
totally. It's wild.
It was true to character until the very end.
You're right. You're right. He upheld his moral stance till the very end.
Yeah.
Which, respectable in a way. So.
No, I think.
Yeah.
Wild. What a wild life for that man.
Wild life, for sure. Like, fascinatingly. So yeah, guys, if you don't know about Max Mosley and you've been interested to hear what we had to say about this documentary, I recommend actually going to watch it. It's not very long, hour and a half. It's on Netflix in the UK. You probably have to rent it in America, or buy it.
You can't really rent it or buy it, so you're gonna have to find
an unofficial copy.
An official copy, or like a hard copy.
Or a hard copy.
Go the old fashioned analog route. So one or the other. But yeah, it's not super popular in the US.
Or get a VPN. That VPN. Could work. VPN could work.
I'm saying all this unofficially because it's not that I do that any of this.
Of course not. Never. Ever.
No.
But yes. So, highly recommend this documentary. Very good structure, story, content, all of it. Very well done.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
And if you want to learn more about, even though it's focusing on Max Mosley, about how Formula One evolved as a sport, he's very much at the root of that. So definitely look into that if you're interested in the business side of Formula One as well.
Yeah.
And if you're interested in road safety. I genuinely found that quite interesting, that part of the documentary.
I did too.
Like, initially I was like, why are they telling this parallel of him road safety in India? And then at the end I was like, it all makes sense.
But he also just, like, really, that was an issue he was very passionate about. Like,
yeah cool. It was like his hill to die on, in a way. Mm-hmm. Which, good for him to pick such a good hill to die on.
Such a good hill.
So rest in peace, Max Mosley.
Yeah.
Well, I think we can say to you, if you are omnipresent in some way, that you did fulfill an interesting life and made a difference to a lot of people. And I think that's what you really wanted to do.
Better way than your dad did, for sure.
Exactly. So, there you go.
Yeah.
Recommend. Five stars.
5 out of something.
5 stars. Yeah. Definitely higher end rating, so check it out, guys. We loved it. And next week we will be returning to a Grand Prix.
Australia.
Aussie, Aussie, Aussie.
Australia.
Oi, oi, oi. I was wanting you to do the oi, oi, oi.
Oi, oi, oi. You happy now?
Yeah. So cool. I'm excited. I don't know how excited I have to wake up early, but that's the burden of one race for me and like a lot of races for other people, so I won't complain about it.
I will see you all at midnight or 1 a.m.
4 a.m. free practice on Friday for British people, so look out for that, guys.
All the Americans right now are just rolling their eyes.
I mean, all like the Australians in general that watch Formula One are like, we have to stay up this late all the time.
Like constantly.
Constantly.
Yeah.
All right. So shout out Daniel Ricciardo. Hope to see you in top shape next week.
Yeah. Let's not DNF.
Please.
Let's go.
See you later, guys.
See you later.
Thank you for listening to the Speed Trap Podcast.
As always, we appreciate your support.
To stay involved in the conversation, reach out to us on social media at Speed Trap Pod.
Speed Trap's official music was created and produced by Boxed Okami. You can find more of his work on Instagram at Boxed Okami.
See you next week.